This podcast is part of the Shareable Podcast Network. Learn more at shareable.fm. This is Rogue. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Hello, my fellow superhumans. I am Jeff Gibbard, broadcasting to you live from Shareable FM headquarters right here in sunny Philadelphia. And I am pumped to bring you another episode of Rogue, the only podcast where I don't just interview superheroes, I steal from them. Every episode, I bring on a guest who has a real-world superpower, a mindset, a craft, a way of being. And then I get close enough to break apart their unique ability so it can be understood, rebuilt, and stolen. I don't just ask questions. I go line by line through their operating system until it's yours for the taking. Listen to ignite your superhuman spark and leave powerful enough to change the world. Now, let's get to know today's superpowered guest. Yeah. All right, Chris. By the way, what'd you think of the new intro? I feel like I need to re-record the video part, but I feel pretty good about it. Welcome to the show, Chris. Nice to get a chance to chat with you.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me, man. But don't even trip about the video at the start. It looks great.
Okay, good. Good. Okay. Yeah. You're a member of the Superhero Institute. You have been a friend of mine for coming on like 5 or 6 years now. And we met through our mutual friend, Yvonne Alston. And man, it's just been awesome to stay in touch this whole time. And I'm glad we finally get the chance to do a podcast together because you are someone that I want to steal superpowers from. And the one that we're going to talk about today is one that I know we share a serious interest in. And I've learned even in the last like 2 weeks, a lot from you in this. So what is your superpower?
Yeah, so my superpower is all about power augmentation, taking superpowers and powers of what people already have and amplifying them to being something even bigger.
So one of the things I really appreciate about this superpower is that, you know, I'm a huge superhero nerd and I have superhero statues and figurines everywhere. Like I got a little Daredevil right here. And so I have a superpowers poster that I would bring my kids by. And we look at the superpowers and they choose a superpower in the morning. And when you and I talked about having you on the show, and I was like, well, you know, you have all these different superpowers. What should we talk about? And you said power augmentation, you know, amplifying the abilities of others. And then you said, I can't think of a superhero who that's their power. And I have been mulling that for like since you said it, like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And I have not been able to think of a superhero who actually can do that, their power is not about themselves. It's purely about their ability to amplify others. I haven't done any research about it because I wanted to first see, like, in my mind, could I remember it? Could I think of it? And I couldn't. And I love that because it is such a, how could that have been overlooked this whole time? How is there not like a major character whose whole job is just to amplify others? This show, Rogue, it's about stealing other people's and using it for yourself. But yours is, no. Let me help make you better. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that DC and Marvel have completely left out this huge character, right? This type of superpower. And just imagine the good or bad that could happen from amplifying powers, right? And there's a ton of stories that can happen from it. And I think that we see even in the real world where there are people who work behind the scenes, kind of like what I do, where things do get amplified for better or for worse. And, you know, just to be clear, I'm here to amplify things for the better, right? And so really want to focus on how can we find ways to make things better for everyone?
I dig that. So for people who don't know who you are and what you do yet, like give a little brief intro so there's some context, and then let's jump into understanding the superpower, breaking it down, stealing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for myself, I am in the world of learning and development. So I am the person behind the scenes, usually working under HR in organizations, or I've also consulted in the past, where I am going into organizations and I am focused on making people successful in the roles that they're in or in the roles that they want to be in. So fits very, very well into this superhero power that I have around, well, how can I make your strengths even stronger to get you to where you need to go in your career?
I love it. So learning and development is a really good lens for us to have on that. back in the day, you had a podcast called People First Leadership. It was People First Leadership, or was it just People First?
Leading People First.
Leading yeah. People First. Okay, so I had it backwards.
Yeah.
And so even beyond the scope of your role of learning and development, I think you really have been consistent as long as I've known you in seeing the people that you're working with, treating them as people first and looking for ways to amplify and bring out the best in them, create environments that bring out the best in people. So it's definitely been consistent throughout it. So let me ask you, as a, just a starting point of this whole thing, why make people better around you? Why not just focus on your own stuff, man? Why not just steal other people's superpowers, get more powerful, and climb the corporate ladder and do your own thing? Why waste any time, spend any time on making other people better?
Well, that's where I've personally found my own kind of purpose and passion, right? Is I did the Simon Sinek why exercise years ago. And I was like, well, what is my why? Like, what am I really here for? What do I really love doing in the work that I do? And it really did derive around, well, a lot of the time it was around, I was coaching people, I was giving people advice, right? And I think there's a lot of people who are out there that their friends come to, right? And they're constantly being asked for advice or help or support. And I found that there was a way, I found the way to augment that into a career, right? Which is in learning and development. And so when I figured out my why, right, making people or helping people be successful no matter where they are, that's what really drew me into what I love doing. And getting to see people succeed, knowing that I had a slight hand in it, just either pushing them in the right direction or building out frameworks for them or building out entire programs for them to go through, is really fulfilling for me.
So give me the response to the cynic who says, great, you found your purpose and that's good that you're making the world a better place. But what does it mean to me? What does it mean to my bottom line? What does it mean to my office environment, whether it's a small business or an enterprise? Why should I care about making the people around me better? Say you're a manager of a small team, right? Inside of a bigger org. Why care about making anybody else bigger or better rather than just focusing on yourself and your own advancement? Isn't it a threat to potentially make other people better? So like address some of that idea. Sell us on why you would want to make people better around you.
Well, the first question I would ask is, well, what is your team maybe not doing? Like how would you like them to succeed more, right? And I think every manager, every leader in a company would say, yeah, we could do more. We want more profit or we want more market share. It's like, well, how do you do that, right? And at the end of the day, it's their people doing that work. And so when you look at the people, when you look at your employees or your team members, what are the skills that you either are not highlighting or focusing on to increase whatever or to get you to where your goals need to be? Or what are some of the weaknesses or areas of opportunity that you need to shore up? And you can't do that without learning and growing, right? The metaphor that I constantly use with managers who are cynics is, well, have you ever had a New Year's resolution? 99% of people say yes, right? And I think 99% of people will also say they've probably had a New Year's resolution around getting more fit or losing weight or running a marathon or something like that, where it's, I want to physically get better. Well, if you want to get better, you have to learn what exercises work. You have to learn you need to learn about nutrition. You need to learn about all of these things. And then you need a program to get you from point A to point B to point C. And so without that structure or without those programs and without that knowledge, how do you know as an individual who wants to lose weight or gain muscle or whatever it might be, how do you know what to do, when to do it, and what works for you? And so again, that's where I step in to say, hey, let's build this out. We can figure out what those best practices are, and that we can implement them for your team.
So on the positive side, it sounds like you know, you start, even if you're addressing a cynic, you start from like, well, what do you want? How do you want to grow? How do you want to get better? So take it from whether you're coming from a cynical position or you really have a growth mindset. You think to yourself, well, there's the people around me. They're part of the team I'm traveling with to get to my goal. If I make them better, and if I do the work to try and create a program and the scaffolding and the structure around it to help them, there's a higher likelihood that they'll do better. And if they do better, we all do better. And so that all makes sense. On the other side of it, what's lost when we don't do that? What's at stake if we don't make the people around us better? Because there's, I think that, I can't remember where I first heard this. It might've been in my MBA I heard this, but the biggest competition that any business typically has in anything is nothing. Meaning to do nothing, to maintain the status quo, to not make any changes, to not make any waves, to just do nothing is often the biggest competition you have to any sort of change you're trying to introduce, anything you're trying to sell, anything you're trying to do. Doing nothing is often the thing that will beat you if you can't make a compelling argument for movement. So we've got the side of like, well, things would be better if we do this and we invest in it. But is there's always like the, well, would it be that much better than doing nothing? And so then we have to look at, well, what's lost if we don't do it? So if we don't invest in making our people better, if we don't spend any time thinking about amplifying those around us, what could possibly happen?
Yeah, so I'll start with the almost cliche case studies at this point, right? Kodak. They did not invest in digital technology for digital cameras and they fell behind, right? They still kind of exist, but almost as a shell of themselves. Blockbuster, gone due to yep. Netflix, right? Right. All of these companies that decided to stick with the status quo and not push to innovate and grow are either no longer here or they are a shell of what they used to be. That's the cliche case study that we, many of us know and have heard before. The untold stories of not doing anything are employees no longer becoming engaged with the work that they're doing because they're not pushing. I would say a strong majority of us are always looking to get better and to grow, right? As individuals, we want that next promotion or we want to move laterally into a new role that is going to teach us something new, right? Us as individuals, us as human beings, we're always looking to grow and to do more. And if we are not doing that, and if we're not in an environment that will let us thrive, we will die and we will find a way to remove ourselves from those organizations. So a manager who does not create that culture or that environment of learning and growth is going to find that their team is going to start leaving or become disengaged. And with disengagement, there are numerous studies and a lot of research on this, where if you have disengaged employees, you are going to lose out on profits. And so you have to invest in your people to create these learning environments for them. I'll use another metaphor, and I think this is one that many people are familiar with. Gardening is just like learning. Right? If you have a flower or plant or vegetable garden, whatever it might be, it needs all of the right environmental factors for those things to grow. Sun, water, light, like all fertilizer, all of those things to grow properly. If you take that into the context of a person or us as human beings, if we are not being given sunlight, we're not going to grow. If we're not being given the right resources, like fertilizer or education, we're not going to be able to do the thing that we need to do, whether it's in this role or what we need to do as our jobs evolve, right? And we're seeing a huge evolution in the way of work right now with AI. If we're not teaching employees how to do certain things for tomorrow, we're going to fall behind as a company or as people. So it's really important to continue to like foster that environment.
I think one of the parts that you pointed out about we're always looking to grow is that like we are always in a state of change as people, right? Because we are, as time progresses, we are getting older, we are changing, our life environment changes. And if our career, if the role that we're in stays static for too long, it begins to feel like we're leaving that part of our life behind as everything else progresses. And so I think that's a really interesting motivating thought around the people on your team and how you see them as people in progress rather than static people. They're not the people that you hired. They're the people that they're evolving into. And to your point of a garden is like, do you want to just plant them in the soil and then stick them in the shade, not water them, not, you know, make sure that they have sunlight and water. Or do you want to actually nurture them so that they can flourish in your garden? And to your point, if they're looking to grow, if they're looking to constantly evolve and change, then if they can't get it where they are, they're going to look for it somewhere else. So they're going to take an opportunity from someone else who promises them the opportunity to grow and to flourish and to learn more and to do more and to earn more. So there is a real, you know, just looking at the people around you, you have the option of doing nothing. You have the option of not investing them or trying to drive people into the ground, or you have the option of investing them and trying to better them and grow them in ways that that match what they need to flourish.
Yeah, 100%.
So I want to know where it starts for you. So you mentioned you did the Simon Sinek exercise of the starting with why. But I'm curious if you look further back in your history and you look for like sort of the origin story of why this matters to you. One of the things that I've noticed about people with superpowers, whatever unique ability we have as people, it always comes from somewhere. It always comes from something that happened to us, something that we were born with and we didn't realize was a gift until later. Maybe we realized it early. Maybe it's something that we knew we needed, so we worked at it really hard. So I kind of call these like the Superman, Spider-Man, Batman sort of archetypes of like, you were either born on Krypton and that's just what you got, or, you know, something happened to you, you got bit by a spider and then all of a sudden you could do this thing and all of a sudden it was great, you know, in terms of your ability, or you Batmaned it. You trained until you were the world's greatest detective. So looking back into your background, the origin story of how wanting to develop people, realizing you could do it, understanding it, seeing that there was an ability there. Kind of take us back to that and help us understand how it formulated for you.
Yeah, I would say I probably fall more in that Superman mold, where this is just something that I've always been interested in. I just didn't realize it yet. And again, going back to, you know, people giving advice, that was definitely me, right? Like growing up, even in junior high, high school, I was that friend that people would come to just talk and vent. And I would try to give advice with my, you know, at the time, very limited amount of experience. And moving into college, I had actually considered a career in psychology. And so with the idea of, I'm constantly helping people mentally already, right? How can I do that as a profession? And as I explored psychology itself, I was like, ooh, I don't know if I want to be that. I don't know if I want to hold that role of like constantly taking on burden from other people and like helping them work through it. I would like to see something a bit more tangible, as well as something, something more tangible. And so that led me to, as I was exploring some more, I was like, oh, business management is psychology, but for corporate people, right? For like, for business people. And so I started looking into management and leadership in business, and I found the parallels fascinating, right? It's all about how do you help move people psychologically from one place to another, right? This is change management. This is learning. Learning and change management are the exact same principles, right? Is what is the current state of someone? What is the state you would like them to get to? How do we get them there, right? What are the steps that we need to build, or what are the things that we need to do to activate them to go from this current state to the next state? And so I fell into the world of business management and leadership. And from there, out of college, I was struggling to find a job, but I landed a role as a manager at Starbucks. And for my old school Starbucks.
We lost Chris just temporarily, I think. Oh, there you go. Yeah. You're back.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Did I get cut off at the Starbucks piece?
Yeah, you said Starbucks and then you got cut off.
Okay, so as a manager at Starbucks, my old school Starbucks managers will know that we called being a Starbucks manager the Starbucks MBA, right? It's because you had to learn about business, and you had to learn, you got everything from an MBA program as a Starbucks manager. You had to learn about profit and loss. You had to learn about resource management, supply chain. You had to learn about training and building people up, onboarding, all of the things that you would typically get in an MBA program. And so what I really gravitated towards was the training and the development piece. And so that's where I really stuck into, hey, I really enjoy this portion. Do I like balancing my P&L statement at the end of every month? No. Do I know how to do it? Yes. Do I love inventory and resource management? Not really. But again, I always fall back into how do I make my partners, that's what, right, Starbucks employees are called, their partners. How do I help my partners become the best partners and baristas and supervisors that they can be? And so in my Starbucks career, I had the pleasure of getting, helping a lot of individuals grow and promote into other roles, either as supervisors or other managers or fellow managers, so they could learn and grow themselves. So when I finally broke into the quote unquote corporate or big boy, you know, office world, that's where I still leaned back on. And that's where I fell into the world of learning and development.
When it comes to your own, having learned this discipline of all of the things that go into growing people, there's an interesting set of things that happen simultaneously as I like understand your story. Because on the one hand, there's your hands-on experience, right? There's being the Starbucks manager. There's the background of it being in school and the person that people came to investigating psychology and focusing on helping people. And there's like this very like life experience side of it. And then on the other hand, we've had conversations recently where it's very clear that you have a very strong discipline in actually studying the academic side of what it is to develop lesson plans and to understand learning objectives and to understand how people learn. So there's sort of like the formal, the informal, the experiential. There's a lot of elements that go into learning this. And I'm curious if you give any more weight to one side or the other in what's helped you to be good at this, like the part of helping others. Do you think that that's rooted in your desire to help people more than it is in the tangible skills that you've learned through reading and studying? Do you think that you're hands-on in the weeds of being a manager and having to manage all these different things while still also managing the relationship with partners and growing them? Is there any part of all of that if you had to like go back in time and point to it and say, this is the thing that I think really amplified my own abilities to amplify others the most, where would you how would you rank all of that? I mean, obviously they're all important, but where would you say, like, if I was brand new at this and I wanted to learn how to amplify people, where would you start me?
Yeah, I think I would go back to the conversation that you and I had a couple of weeks ago, and I'll fill people in who are listening or watching into what this is. It's for me, it's the academic piece, right? It's answering some very simple and basic questions around, well, ultimately, if I'm a person and I want to grow, what is the thing that I want to be able to do, right? Whether that's in life or at work. Right, personally or professionally, what is the thing that I want to be able to do? And I think that this is a very important question to ask. What is the tangible thing you're hoping to do? And so when we look at something like learning and development, it's about what is the behavior change that we are expecting out of an employee? They used to do this. Now we want them to do this. Right. And so let me give a real life example. With managers, they often need a lot of training around communication. And communication in and of itself is a very broad topic. I get this request all the time, and I've gotten it a lot throughout my career around like, hey, we need our managers to be able to communicate better. Great. What about communication do you need them to do better? Is it communicating with their employees? Communicating with each other, communicating to executive leadership? Do they need to be able to communicate? Do they need to be able to present? What are the specifics of communication that they need to be able to do? Once we start honing in on those specific skills, then we can start looking at, okay, well, what is the actual impact of that going to be? So they need to be able to help enable their teams to be able to execute a process. Great. They don't do well at communicating to their team, hey, we need to change this process, or you need to do this process better, and they need to coach their employees better. And so it's really about starting from that objective point. And I know, Jeff, you've talked about this recently, is like, well, what are the learning objectives that an employee needs to that we need to hit as an L&D team, right? What do we need these employees to be able to learn in this session, whether it's a live session or an asynchronous session? By the end of this, they need to be able to do this thing. And that's how we know we're successful as an L&D team, right? As learning and development professionals. Because then that will derive our success from that. And so that piece is very academic and saying, what do you need to be able to do? What is the impact at the end of the day?
How do you think about the balance then between this perspective of so you're if you want to be able to grow people, you have to kind of learn the process of how that works. And a lot of that comes from starting with the objective in mind and building a plan around that. So then you go out and you do some research and understanding to better understand how you can grow people towards that objective. So that part I think is kind of clear. I would assume to most people that it's like you want to do a thing, okay, you learn how can I get there? I guess when you take the perspective of I'm a manager, I'm a leader, and I want to grow these people on my team to be able to do this specific thing. How do you, as a people-first individual, how do you think about this so that you're able to take someone with raw talent, someone who you need to see a behavior change in, because that's the directive, right? And how do you think about being able to actually make that work? Because you can't just say to someone like, you got to get better, right? You can't just shout at them like, do better and this is the objective and learn it. It's like people learn in different ways. People have different incentives for why they would want to grow. So there's all of these things that are embedded in helping people grow that is a lot more than here's the objective and here's the language we're going to use to communicate it. Then the real work begins of, well, how do you actually do it? And I know this is where the rubber meets the road, right? Like in the beginning, it's sort of like, you have to have a baseline understanding of how to go about this process before you can to get into it. But then when you get into actually working with real people, the variables are infinite. And so I'm curious how your thinking works. How do you think about this process? Is it individually? Is it collectively? Is it, are you focused on any particular facet of this whole puzzle?
I'm glad that you bring it back to the people first mindset, because learning and development ultimately has to be a people first experience, because we are focused on people in and of themselves, right? And so when we think about the learner at the end of the day, we have to really understand who our audience is. We have to understand what are they doing, when might they be using this skill or this thing that they're learning. What is the most common modality of learning for them, and what's effective? And a lot of times we might not know the answer to that, so we can usually fall back on experiential learning. I know that there is the idea of, well, I'm an auditory learner, I'm a kinesthetic learner, visual, like all of those types of these like learning archetypes that we have, and those can get us only so far. Ultimately, at the end of the day, as humans, we have to be able to experience what we're doing to be able to put it into practice. So what that means is, unfortunately, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It means like role playing, right? Hey, I'm going to put you in a fake scenario in this learning class, of how to have an uncomfortable conversation with your employee. No one likes role playing. No one likes to pretend like they're little actors, especially if they have to do it in front of a group. However, that's the only way that you can get comfortable flexing that muscle, right? The only way you're going to get buffer in the gym is to go to the gym and work out, right? You have to expose yourself and be a little uncomfortable. And so experiential learning is critical here. We have to be able to practice it and practice it and practice it to get better at the thing that we're doing. And so that's where having safe learning environments is critical, because if someone feels unsafe in the environment that they're in, they're not going to buy in, right? They're not going to feel like they can actually truly practice and even potentially fail, right? And let's face it, we're humans, we're going to fail a lot. And so when we're learning, we need to feel safe in these environments to be able to fail and to be able to get honest feedback and improve. So this is where I would say, to answer your question, learning really does need to be as experiential as possible, because it also helps make it relevant. I've gone to multiple clients and customers over the years, and the moment they feel like a scenario doesn't ring true to them, they're like, nope, this doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
And if they feel like it doesn't apply, they're gone. We've lost them already. So having that be a very real case for them, and this is where I'll do my work and I'll work with, you know, subject matter experts within the customer group and say, okay, give me some like real life scenarios, right? Of how this might play out. That will make it all the more real for the people going through the program. And then from there, they will also then be able to apply it in those experiential learning platforms or programs.
How much of the process that you go through when you're looking at taking a team or taking an individual and helping them to grow, we kind of started out the conversation talking about amplifying people's abilities. And there's the side of learning development, which is like, let's have you learn a skill that you don't know and that we need you to get better at. And then there's the side of, we want you to use and utilize this power that you already have that you're good at. And then sometimes there's like, we want you to use the skill that you're really good at that you don't even know that you're good at. And so I'm curious, when it comes to the individualized, personalized, you know, thinking about the people that you're working with, how do you communicate to someone what their true ability is? How do you assess that? How do you think about having those conversations? How do you work with what people's existing strengths are, whether you need to teach them something new or have them amplify something they're already good at?
Yeah, I will be the first to admit that this is much easier done on a smaller scale than a larger scale. Yeah. So this is much more effective or impactful in a one-to-one conversation or like a one-to-few conversation, right? Is being able to give immediate feedback to individuals to say, okay, well, what are your strengths? Or these are your strengths. How can you apply them, right? What are the opportunities for you to be able to apply them? Because when we talk about amplification, it really is taking, hey, here's this one little thing that I can do. How do I make a bigger impact, right? It might be a pebble, but how do we make it a ripple, right? And so companies are not great at doing this, right? You are hired to do this job. You're expected to have these skills. Don't deviate from them. The only chance you have to quote unquote stretch is if you're going into a promotion, right? And so a lot of organizations that are overly structured struggle with this. They don't realize the talent that they have, or they don't realize the abilities that their team members may or may not hold, because they're not looking at people holistically. They're looking at them through the lens, this very tiny lens of what their job is. And so, for example, one of the last companies I worked for, they were looking to spend several tens of thousands of dollars on copywriting. What they didn't know is that there were several people in their customer experience team that had copywriting experience. And they were not willing to entertain the idea of training them to save tens of thousands of dollars, because they saw those individuals as, nope, they are only in customer experience. They cannot do this copywriting work, even if they have copywriting skills and experience. So it's something that we have
passions. Like they may even yes. be like, it would be great to get to flex that. That's my creative muscle.
Yes, exactly. And it's so for organizations, it's really, really difficult for them to like kind of expand their view. But when I get to work closely with executive leaders or managers or individuals, it's much easier to say, okay, how do we have these, let's have these conversations around, well, what are you good at? What if people said that you're good at that you may not have actually used or consciously used, right? And so part of that exercise is, if we can really get deep into it, is that I tell people, go to your, find 5 or 10 of your closest friends, families, or previous coworkers, and ask them, what are my strengths? What are my top 5 strengths? And what's one that I may not even know myself, that I might not consciously know? What's not obvious to me? And then, you know, I would also say, well, like ask them, what are your weaknesses? What are things that you can improve? That way you can kind of shore those things up and manage those things. But again, that exercise helps shine a light from people that you trust and people that love you, or at least respect you, that and that you respect, to say, hey, these are things that you might not even know you're good at. I came to you for these things that were not in your job description or your responsibilities, but you killed it. You knocked it out of the park. So then we start honing in on those skills and say, great, how do we make this even bigger? Do you want to flex into this work? Or can you incorporate it more? And so having those conversations ends up being much more impactful than companies trying to roll out a talent development plan.
Sort of a quick question here. That's just an aside, because I had the thought of it. What do you think is the bigger of the two problems, if you had to pick one? Do you think that it's people don't know what their superpowers are, or that organizations are unwilling to let people flex those superpowers? If you had to like pick, like which was a maybe not more of consequence, because obviously if the organization doesn't allow people to flex it, that's of greater consequence. But in terms of like, what's the sticking point that is more common? Because you have to think, like, an organization is just one thing, but each person is like kind of compounding, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and I'm actually struggling to answer that, because as individuals, I the first thing that I think about with someone having unrealized superpowers or knowing what their superpowers might be but not getting to explore or flex them, the mental and emotional impact it has on that individual is huge, right? And that's also a common reason for burnout, is that people feel like they are not being flexed or strengthened or being able to put their skills to use. And so that's a huge burden on us as individuals, is that you'll end up getting burnt out, being stuck. Right. And I think we've seen this in previous generations, where we're working, I think, as a society to be better at this, is talking and working through mental and emotional health. Right. And also being able to be more present in your day to day versus like the office space life, where it's like, oh, you're just doing the same thing every day, every day, every day. And it's like, you're just going through the motions. So I think from an individual standpoint, that's potentially more consequential. For an organization, I think most organizations are just so used to the status quo that they don't realize the impact it could have. And I think it would take some significant research here in this area to really uncover what that could be. Because, I mean, just imagine the consequence, positive consequences of a company of, let's just say, a mid-sized company, a few hundred people to 1,000 people, where all of a sudden they say, hey, we want to recognize and see you as an individual for who you are holistically, not just who you are as an employee in your job role. Where can we flex you? Where can we use your superpowers? And I think that the impact that company would have would be huge, right? Because all of a sudden you're going from maybe one or two people being able to really strengthen their organization to hundreds of hundreds or thousands of people, right, being impacted. So, and this is something else too, is that like companies don't understand, I think most companies don't understand the impact that they have on their local communities either. So if you suddenly have even a few hundred employees who can now take their skills, they may not be able to apply it directly in the job, but the company says, hey, we're going to let you volunteer in your in our community by using this superpower and flex it. We're going to pay you, you know, 8 hours a month to do this, to go volunteer. Imagine the impact that would have on local communities, right? And so I think that that is more consequential as an organization, but again, as individual people, as individual humans, I think that it's really important for us to be able to understand how to use our superpowers or uncover them.
So I'm going to take that question and I'm going to keep going with it, because I'm going to ask you it from a slightly different perspective as sort of our closing wrapping kind of idea before I try to summarize how I understand your superpower. People that are listening and are trying to apply this idea prior to summarizing this, but they want to take an action. They want to get out there. They want to do the first thing that they can do to grow the people around them, to amplify other people's superpowers. And so my question for you would be is this: if you had to pick one direction for them between these two, or you can choose a third option, which would you recommend? Would you tell them to begin getting to know the people on their team better, helping them to identify their superpowers, really getting and looking for what makes this person extraordinary, encouraging them to talk to people around them about their strengths and weaknesses, like focusing on the individuals on their team and trying to forget what it doesn't matter about the company, but just focusing on the people around them and trying to just amplify them one by one in their interactions all the time, or focusing on going towards the leadership team and trying to make the environment one in which there's a more supportive culture around growing people and around the importance of this, advocating for investing in people, advocating for, and again, I want you to pluck yourself out of your current environment and pluck yourself out of like a consultant's seat or any, like nothing about like self-serving in this, but just really diagnosing it as an expert in this, as somebody in this field. Yeah. If you had to come in and give somebody a direction to profoundly change things, do you think that they should start from the bottom and go up, or start from the top and go down to try and create more people who have powers that are being amplified?
All right, let me start with the realist in me. And I would say go with the, start focusing on the people around you. Start learning who they are, what they do, what's like, just ask questions, right? This is a conversation that you can have with your friends or your workers. What are you doing? What do you feel like you should be doing or could be doing that you're not getting to? How might you be able to flex that superpower? Or if they don't know what their superpower is, you know, go through that exercise with them. Say, hey, I've noticed you do XYZ really, really well, right? Is that something that you feel like that's a natural skill that you have, right? Realistically, I think every single one of us can have a conversation with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people around us to amplify those, that immediate circle of friends or coworkers, to be able to strengthen themselves, to be able to amplify those superpowers. Now, the optimist in me says, go for the leadership group. If you have the opportunity the opportunity to influence a leadership group to create a learning culture, then by all means, absolutely do that. I would 100% take that, because again, for me, as a people first leader, really looking at how do I make the experience of employees or people in their communities better? It has to come from, you have to have the leadership buy-in to be able to do that. And if you can do that, you're going to not only affect five people, you're going to be affecting hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And you're not only making those their lives better for them directly, but you're making the lives around those individuals better, right? If you can make one employee in your company, if you can make their life better, you're making the lives of their friends better, the lives of their families better. You're making such a big impact. So you're instantly making that impact exponential. So if you can do that, if you have the ear or the influence for of a leadership team, I would absolutely say, figure out what your strengths are, what your team's strengths are, and start creating that learning culture, because you're going to make a huge, huge impact.
I love it. Okay, so this whole time I've been taking some notes. I've been thinking, I've been asking questions, I've been curating, because what I do on this show is I try to steal people's superpowers, try to understand how it works, the code that's underneath what you do. So I'm going to read back to you the notes that I've taken, the things that I've heard in you, and I apply my superhuman framework to it, which is my method of growth: learning, thinking, communication, and action. We look through those four meta abilities to figure out how we can do incredible, extraordinary things. So when I hear someone's superpower, I try to use that framework for understanding it. So here's what I heard. I heard that from the standpoint of how we grow people, one of the most important things we can start with when it comes to our own learning journey is understanding how people learn, is understanding how to create scenarios where we begin with the end goal in mind, something very specific, and we figure out what it takes to get there. We understand how to go about a learning process, understanding learning objectives, learning theories, and we don't have to get super deep into the academic literature of it and like go deep in the study, but understanding the basic building blocks of how people grow and learn, incredibly important, and it will also help us with our change management later on. So from the learning standpoint, starting with look into learning as a starting point. Then from a thinking perspective, this is the one that I knew that I was going to get so much good stuff out of you. But I think what I heard are three really big, big things here. If you want to help people grow, first, you have to be oriented around being people first and helping people. If you are not about helping people, it's going to be really hard to focus on helping other people grow, because you don't have the mindset around investing and pouring into other people so much as thinking about your own needs. So I think it's really helpful to have a mindset, kind of your point about the Superman kryptonite thing, or the Superman being born on Krypton, is like, a lot of people are just born that they want to help people. But even if you don't, seeing that helping people also helps you help yourself, helps your own situation, because you have things that you want to achieve and you have people around you you're doing it with. So if you help them, you help yourself get there. So in either case, helping people is a key idea that you have to keep in mind as you do it. And that's related to the second point that you said, is keeping in mind the reality that people grow and they change and they are going to be looking for more. So if you keep that in your head and you realize that if you help them, that you're going to help them grow and change with you there, that you're able to keep your team together and you're able to help your team grow and accomplish more things. And then the third piece that I heard from you was thinking about not just the individual action of helping one person on your team or anything that you're doing in that small thing, but to try and zoom out and expand and see the ripples of what can also happen when you help people. So having that domino effect, chain reaction kind of mindset, that the help you're giving to people on your team, the amplifying, the helping them grow, all of that is sending things out into the world that are bigger than this thing that's right in front of you. From a communication standpoint, I heard that there's kind of two things that make a lot of sense. And this is kind of where we wrapped up a bit, was that one thing we can do in our communication is to be generous in pointing out to people their superpowers, to let them know when you see things that they do well, because I think we would probably both agree that many people don't even know what their abilities are. So when we have the opportunity to point out to someone, hey, I've noticed you do that really well, or, you know, I've noticed that you seem to really enjoy doing that, can we, you know, let's talk more about that. That sort of a thing opens up a path that may not have been open to someone because they just didn't even know it was there. And then secondarily is advocate wherever you are. You can do, you know, to the degree that you are safe to do this, but advocate for like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had more opportunities for all of our team members to grow or to invest in their passions or these sorts of things. You don't have to go and like, you know, form a protest outside of the boss's door, but to subtly advocate for every member of your team having access to more. Again, it goes into that idea that like the more we do this, the more it benefits all of us. And then the last thing I heard that we, it was kind of where we started a bit, and it was present in your Starbucks example versus sort of like more formalized education and, you know, the idea of you helping people is get experiential with this. If you want to be able to help people grow, one, having the own experience of your own, of dropping yourself into a situation where it's important to help the people around you grow so that you all succeed, learning how to grow yourself, resolutions, things like that, that gives you a window into how to help other people grow. But putting people in positions where they have to experience things in order to grow and having the freedom and the trust to let them do it in a safe environment so that they can grow, critical pieces of being able to give them the tools they need to be able to go out there and grow and get amplified. So went through the learning, thinking, communicate, action, heard a lot of different things. I'm curious, having heard that from me summarizing what I heard from you, did I leave anything out that you think is super critical for people who want to mirror and steal this ability for themselves?
Man, what a superpower it is that you have to be able to like synthesize all of that and make it like really nice and clean. No, I think that summarizes it very well, right? It's really around when you are supporting others grow and helping them grow, right? How you really are thinking about who they are as an individual. And I would say, I would push that just one step further actually and say, when we are having conversations with other people, whether it's with our coworkers, with one of our employees, with someone, you know, a friend or a family member, we really don't dig in very well into what is actually happening with them. A lot of conversations, in my experience or from what I've observed, are still pretty shallow, right? How are you? How's work? Oh, it's fine. You know, we might get into like, oh, well, what's good about work or what's tough about work, but we stop it there. We should really try to understand who our people are or who the people around us are, what makes them tick, what is happening outside that may be influencing a superpower being suppressed or a superpower that has not yet been uncovered, right? And so get to know your people better. Again, it could be your employees or friends and family members, but dig a little bit, because what's happening over here in their job is influencing what's happening in their personal lives, right? And vice versa. So if we can create those connections, we may be able to uncover a superpower or be able to unblock a superpower for people and help them really like take off.
So to add to that list, then I'm going to add into thinking curiosity and care, that the caring about others enough to be curious so that you can remove barriers for them, so that you can make them feel safe enough that they're able to press forward and try something new, I think is absolutely critical. So Chris, I want to thank you for coming on to the show, for coming on to Rogue and letting me steal your superpowers. I do hope that it was not too draining for you. Please tell any of the people that are listening or watching where to find you when Gotham is in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn at Lead with Chris. I also have an Instagram handle, Lead with Chris, as well. Feel free to reach out at either of those platforms, and I'm happy to have a conversation.
Amazing. Well, I will make sure that all of that is in the show notes. And this has been another episode of Rogue today with Chris Lynn, and I've been Jeff Gibbard. And until the next one, please keep doing your part to make sure that the world is kinder, safer, and more equitable. See you on the next one.
See ya.